trafficked to Hollow Earth.
Initiation, training, chosen one, program, out of your body.
The Hunger Games, basically surviving in the environment without anything.
Giant cave in a giant ecosystem, that's essentially Middle Earth.
Gender, confusion, we get into godly therapy. It was gone very, very, very quickly after starting sessions. Physical Babylon in Hollow Earth. There is the Summerlands where the Fae exist.
There is no good Fae.
Was trafficked to physically into a alien body, into another galaxy.
Satan using Jesus's face to tell me, don't follow me. That broke my heart.
You're listening to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall.
We're back on Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall, and I am going to be resuming a conversation that I started with three individuals. They are sisters. And they have a background in satanic ritual abuse and government projects. I am joined by, on the far end, Andrea and Amanda, and right here, Emily. And they spent their first sit-down with me describing a number of things, including how they were programmed in the church they grew up in. They discussed the facilities of the church. Some elements of its oversight, including the fact that many of the board members were Freemasons, tunnels underneath the church, and how that led to various locations, including a military base. They discussed their grandfather, who was a Hitler's youth, and also the source of a lot of their pain and programming. We also got into how their traumas in early childhood opened them up to access by which their parts were trafficked and taken into different realms and used in multiple ways. And that is something that we pretty much left off on. And if you did not listen to the first episode, you really want to before you get into this one, because we're literally going to be picking up where we left off. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we're going to start with Emily. You know, Emily, I want to get started by letting you talk to us a little bit about two things. Number one of the, I guess, more significant alters that you have journeyed with on the inside of your system. And number two, how they put a fake Jesus inside of your system.
Okay. So my altar, so she was a part of something called a Chosen One program.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that this particular Chosen One program worked is they would take young children and, essentially teach us how to fight. And we were, it was kind of like a battle to the last.
Mm-hmm.
And, you, as kids, we would be put into, like cages essentially, or like cells, not cages, but like cells with like wooden doors, looked like something out of a medieval movie. And the whole goal was to become a major player in society in some way. It was to be a walk-in for an entity. And the part that I was a part of was they would take me to this area, which I'm pretty sure was in Hollow Earth, and that was overseen by Nephilim, and we would be taught how to fight and taught skills that was necessarily essentially, it was essentially a hunger game, the Hunger Games. And the winner at the end would be the one that would have this great honor of being bestowed the Chosen One title. And you would then accept a role to basically be called upon whenever this entity needed. And they would put you into a strategic place in society. And for me, it was going to be somewhere in Hollywood and working with the high level witches that were there. And it wasn't to be like a, it wasn't to be like a peon. It was like to be a part of like the witches' covens and to oversee a lot of things. And I believe one of the reasons why that was, why I was able to be chosen for that or taken for that was because of the bloodline that we came from and the iniquity. And a lot of the Nazi deals that had been done, because if you actually look into the history of Hollywood and like who runs Hollywood and the families and do a deep dive on where they're tied to, you can see patterns.
So, and just to kind of spell this out clearly, this was an alternate personality that was taken to Hollow Earth for this Hunger Games type initiation, training, Chosen One program out of your body, correct?
No.
No. Okay.
So the way that it would work is it would, this alternate personality would be brought forward. And then I would be taken physically into this training facility with these holding cells and be kept there for weeks at a time. And because it was so traumatic, because there was a lot of torture and death and, you know, children 6 years old fighting each other. And it was very traumatic. So like the consciousness, like my consciousness couldn't be present all the time. And so, so this other personality would be the one that would hold all the memories. And I do have the memories of it. And I know that, kind of how they were able to get away with taking me for weeks at a time is like our parents, our dad was gone a lot of the times traveling with work. Like they worked him really hard. And our mom actually had an accident that caused her to not really be able to, she'd be on a lot of like pain meds. And so she actually doesn't really remember a lot of the childhood. And so this was when, like before I was 7 years old. And then we also had like grandparents that were watching us and babysitters. That's actually how the church was able to help facilitate and like handle our parents to get to us, was because of some of the accidents and our dad being gone. And so we had a lot of church friends that would come and babysit us or watch us. And that's kind of when some of that stuff would happen. So.
And they would actually keep you for weeks at a time. And so you'd be taken somewhere. And I assume that from that facility, there was an access to Hollow Earth. Is that what you're describing?
Yes. I don't know exactly how they did it and how it worked. But I know that they essentially would leave behind a changeling that would look similar to me. And because I think as a child, you don't really have a set personality. They were easier to get away with like leaving something behind that looked more like me. And then I'd be taken to this place and taken down through tunnels of Middle Earth into a Hollow Earth training facility. And I have a very clear memory of being in essentially a fight pit that we were training. And I looked up and above were these really, really tall beings. They looked kind of they looked humanoid, but their heads were like, their heads turned into like beehives, almost like crystal skull kind of, the beehive shape. And looked human, but uncanny valley in their faces. And so it was Nephilim that were watching over it and were overseeing what was going on, because they were essentially training and picking out the fittest person to be able to handle the force and the presence of a supernatural being, essentially, within their body. And that's kind of why we had to train and why we had to be physically fit, because once that ritual would take place, the body wouldn't be strong enough to anchor that in. Because we're not, as humans, like, we're not designed to hold a full being besides our own soul and our own spirit. And so that is why they had to start so young and for so long, because I think it went on until I was about 10 years old.
Wow. Wow. Now, we're going to be exploring that whole theme more. Tell me about fake Jesus for a minute.
Okay. So my fake Jesus programming, which I, even on my healing journey, like, I still struggle with, and I have to be very conscious about it, because Jesus is my friend.
Yeah.
Like, during that time in the Chosen One program, I do remember being in one of these holding cells at night, and every night Jesus would show up. He would come and walk through the door and sit with me throughout the night, and we would talk. And I do remember asking him, like, why? Why is this going on? Because, like, as a child, like, I knew how horrific this stuff was. And he actually told me about iniquity and the redemption of the bloodline, and just the peace that I would have would get me through that. And so when I was older, there was a point that solidified, they had to break that like love for Jesus. And essentially what they did is they put me through a satanic ritual where they dressed up as Jesus and the disciples. And like one of them, I don't know if it was Satan and demons, like the princes of hell. And like they put on these costumes, like a fake Jesus costume. And Satan was wearing Jesus's face. And the other disciples were wearing the disciples' faces. And they put me in an area where I was all alone, and it was a very pretty area, though. It was like a waterfall, and like I saw Jesus walking by and the disciples and his followers. And I started calling out to Jesus, and he came over. And then I was like, well, let me go with you. And he said, no, you can't follow me. Do not follow me. You shouldn't be one of my disciples. Don't follow me. And then after that, I mean, like, that broke my heart. And then after that, I was thrown into a horrible situation where another a sacrifice was made, like a mother and a child were killed, and when I was in a session, I saw, like, Jesus revealed what actually happened with that. And it was actually a blood ritual where it was Satan wearing Jesus's face, who had been the one. So Satan literally was the one using Jesus's face to tell me, don't love me, don't follow me. And it was literally a lie straight from Satan's mouth. And they solidified it with like a blood ritual and blood sacrifices. But that was how the fake Jesus got put into my system. And it's a choice. I have to like really fight that. And then when the older I got and the older we got with the false reality overlay of like what America has over like the supernatural, it was a lot easier for that to take root because that had damaged my relationship with Jesus so much.
Thank you for sharing. You know, obviously, fake Jesus is a problem for a lot of survivors, especially those that have come out of satanic ritual abuse because, and Freemasonic abuse, because they take so much effort to defile that association to him as a protector, as a caregiver, and they certainly didn't spare any punches with you.
Yep, they did not.
Wow. I want to come back to the Hollow Earth and Middle Earth conversation, because I think this is fascinating. And the fact that, you know, we're sitting here and people are still debating, is Hollow Earth real? There are some people, a lot of people, that are still debating, is Earth spherical or round or flat? We're gonna unpack all of that. But before we get to that, I really want to hit something else. And this has to do with the programming and abuse and how it connects to gender identity confusion and the LGBTQ, we'll say IA plus world. And I know that you guys have some unique experiences along these lines. And one of the things that you mentioned in our first interview, Andrea, is that your whole system is male. I mean, you have a female on the outside. You are a female. You were born gender identity assigned at birth, female, but yet all of these parts inside are male. Well, you're not the only female with male alternate personalities that I've met. And there are many males with female alternate personalities that I've also worked with personally. I want to let you guys talk about this. I want to let you guys talk to me a little bit about your experience with that world, its attempts on your lives and how you've had to sort out some things.
I don't even really know where to start.
Because
well, I know that I personally was definitely slated by the Kingdom of Darkness to be transgender, and to be a transgender activist in some high capacity, because I was definitely heading down that road when we were in Los Angeles. The programming for it started when I started to get active in like media and anime back in middle school. And like tons of my friends were talking about it and like shipping all of the LGBT stuff. And I kept myself away from it for a very, very long time. I was very, very consciously like, no, I'm not touching it. And then we moved to LA. And the atmosphere there is very much so pro-LGBT and transgenderism. And over even, I think it was only 2 years that we lived there. I went from being like, no, I'm staying away from it. I'm not touching it. To actively being like, maybe I am gay. which was also facilitated not only by the online communities and all of my friends being part of that community, but also a person who was brought into my life as a handler who definitely had DID herself, and she was also a member of the LGBT community. She went by they, them. She did not know she had DID, but given the memories I have now, there were alternate personalities there that did a lot of damage and programmed a lot of my parts. I was very confused because in this relationship, I was like, I'm not gay, but I feel some sort of attraction to her. And it turns out that what was going on the inside was one of my alters, who is male, was being attracted to one of her female alters who worked for the entity that he had bondage to.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that was through that manipulating me into the, or grooming me really to admit that I was gay. Cause she was like multiple times she was like, you're gay. And also grooming for the transgender stuff. And so a few years later, I think it was 2018, I started going by they, them and questioning gender. My alters were also completely removed from my system. I had one left at that time, which was the same one who was programmed by this handler who I had cut off relationship with back in 2016. But he was the only one left. And because he could not run my system alone, and also I had my core was not in system at the time and I was running off of very, very little. He basically was just like, well, if I'm going to be doing this alone, I might as well be comfortable. And so he kind of got on board with it too and started thinking I was more masculine than I actually was and was just trying to dress more comfortable for himself. But I also was okay with it. And I was questioning, am I gender fluid? Am I a man? Do I go by he? I actually did try that for a little while. It felt very weird. But the more I was in that community, the more I was like, you know, maybe I am a he. I even started looking into all the gender surgeries.
Wow.
And when I did that, I was like, you know, I don't like either of these options. So I'm going to set that to the side and I'm not going to touch it. And luckily, me and my alter were both in tune enough with God to be like, we are not going to touch the actual transitioning part of this gender confusion stuff until we get into godly therapy. And then that same year, like a few months later, we found your ministry.
Whoa.
And within like the first few coaching sessions I had, the idea of transitioning was completely gone. And it was something I was terrified of tackling in sessions. So it was gone very, very, very quickly after starting sessions.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Now, I actually appreciate you as a female. And I'm so glad that that did not get challenged. Now, I love what you're saying because you're spelling it out so clearly. And I've made this statement for years now. And, you know, one of the things that I've pointed out for a long time is when you have a person who has been traumatized a certain way, such that as their soul is fracturing and splitting, it is splitting into the opposite gender. That splitting and trauma into the opposite gender is going to have an influence on worldview coming from the subconscious where those alternate personalities are living. And I was saying this probably 6-7 years ago. I said, I think this is driving the transgender agenda and the gender confusion, because why wouldn't you be confused if you have male parts on the inside, especially if they are significant alters that have a lot of humanity connected to them, and they see themselves inside as male. Maybe they are attracted to females legitimately as a male alternate personality. Why would that not produce gender confusion? I mean, at the very minimum, confusion, because you have what's going on at the surface and then you have what's going on inside. Mm-hmm. And that wobble and swirl feel. So what you're saying is exactly what I've believed now for probably, you know, the better part of a decade, and especially since getting into this work with people. Now, did either of you want to add to this conversation?
I would. Yes. So I actually was very confident in my femininity. Mm-hmm. I actually was a feminist, and I hated men, and I never wanted to have anything to do with men, but yet I dated. And it was, but from like a weird dichotomy of like being feminine, but yet hating men. And that has to do with like you know, some other trauma I found out that is like, that was programmed into me to hate men, particularly when you're going through trauma and a lot of men are the ones doing it.
Right.
There are women too that do that. Like, I remember a lot of women being around, and women can be just as evil. And I'm very, very passionate about the fact that like men and women are like, they're both human, and women can be and do just as horrible things. And so when I started having gender confusion, I actually started binding my chest. And that was a mission because it is not easy to do. And I am not a small woman. So I actually bought a binder and was binding my chest daily. And I shaved off my hair to where I had just a little pompadour. I shaved all of this. I've been growing this for a really long time. This is how long my hair has been for like years. And when I went to LA, I started cutting it shorter and shorter and shorter until I shaved it all off. I started buying all men's clothing and dressing like men, like a man, and but still being a woman. And something that I did that shocked myself was I was at a bar alone, hanging out, and I hadn't started going to bars alone, but I suddenly started going to bars alone, looking like a guy. And I started hitting on the women that were there and literally trying to pick up women. And I am not sexually attracted to women. And in my sessions, once I started getting healing, because I was still like in this confusion, and it turned out to be a male altar.
Wow.
Who was basically, I think they call it like the fronter.
Okay.
But he was like co-fronting, basically influencing me in all of those ways from the background, like, and helping me live life. And I started living life as a guy because he was so uncomfortable as a woman. And once he started getting healing, that alternate personality started getting healing, I don't have any of those issues anymore. And like, I remember the like moment of clarity of being like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
was when I was at that bar and I asked this woman to dance. And she said no. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's cool. And then I walked away and I'm like, what did I just do?
Yeah.
I'm not even attracted to a woman. Like, I want to go ask that guy. Why did I just ask her? And that like forced me to really examine. And so like, this is like a journey that like we've all had opinions on because we were all living together. And so we've all like seen each other like go through all of this. And so I 100% agree with you that that is... That like that is my lived experience of exactly what you're saying is something from someone from the background influencing that.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me.
Most of the information, most of my opinions are what these two went through. The altar that I had that was male did briefly think about exploring options, mainly going by they, them, just to be more comfortable because he was primarily the one assisting at the time. And he was like, the siblings are doing it. We won't stand out that much and it'll make me more comfortable. But that was close to the limit.
Yeah.
I will say that for me personally, I have often in the past gotten hit on by women. Typically when he was around, I've gotten mistaken as a lesbian fairly often, but that's the limit of my journey with the LGBTQ community.
Now, what you just said is really interesting because what you're saying is depending on how close a male alternate personality, and maybe we could just say that energy field, is to the surface, that actually influences the way people around you react.
Most definitely.
To you. That's very significant. Now, this whole conversation, I think, is highly illuminating because, you know, you have a whole group of people, the woke mind virus has infected, and they want to argue that what was once considered insane is now the only logical conclusion, that a man that is born a man should stay a man. Like, it's like some of these ideas that you are harming somebody by affirming when they are five that just because their sister got a pink dress and they want a pink dress doesn't mean that now they are supposed to be a girl for the rest of their lives. Like, we can't do that. Now we have to, you know, affirm them in their fantasy. You know, because you want a dress, you are a girl. But the logic seems to resonate, I think, most strongly with people that have been highly damaged through trauma for the very reasons we're talking about. And the reasons are that there are internal broken parts that swing, that have actually been established in the opposite gender of the physical body. Mm-hmm. It actually goes beyond that, because I know from someone that's worked with many people that there are parts that are dehumanized during rituals and turned into animals. So cats, dogs, other animals, and they identify. And so you have this phenomena called furries, where people want to act now like an animal. And suddenly with the woke mind virus, we're supposed to say, we're going to empower you to be an animal and lick your hand and roll around on the floor and purr. That's normal. You're laughing. It's hard to say this with a
straight face. Yeah, the beginnings of that with on the internet when we were growing up. We the furry community start up. Now, what you're talking about is the extreme furries. Luckily, there are furries who only believe they're hybrids, which is also stemmed from their alters, who are animal hybrids. Luckily, the extreme cases. I haven't run into many of them personally, but I have run into them.
Wow.
And then there's also the fictive situation with alters that they make of fictional characters. So then those people start believing they are the fictional characters. And I have met some people with DID who are very open about it that are not Christian, who have these fictional characters as alters. And I've talked to them, and it's very trippy.
Yes, Emily.
The gamut of furry to animal has been very interesting to watch growing up, because of I've seen someone on Instagram that is like that, that is acting like an animal, and it is knowing about alters and the fact that it is probably part of their humanity. I mean, and this was a massive conversation that we always had a lot, because we've been Christian, you know, and we've chosen to be Christian. Like, I have chosen several times to remain a Christian. And so we having all of this identity crisis and the gender confusion while still asking God, like, what is going on? And then being able to have the answers of, like, the DID and the brokenness of humanity, and actually you talking about them being, you know, dehumanized and not just hybridized, makes so much more sense to me on, like, how it's gotten as extreme. And the programming through, like, the video games, and you listen to the music and, like, what music is saying and the lyrics. Like, I actually have, like, I have to, if I want to buy a book at a bookstore, I have to pray about the book because of how much programming has been put into books. Like, you can't just pick up a book now, a romance novel, and expect it to be clean. There will probably be some really hardcore sexual explicit stuff in there for, like, young adults. Mm-hmm. And it is, so the programming that has infiltrated media is insane. And it has really affected people that have, that are part of that community. Because I think just the overwhelming amount of people that identify as part of that community, like the LGBTQA plus, their lives are so broken, or they're struggling so much. Like, they are, I don't know why that community has been so targeted, mm-hmm. or how so much has been attributed to that community. Mm. But it's, being a part of it firsthand, like, I identified as part of that community for at least almost a year, mm-hmm. that I was struggling with it. And it's just been, it's so sad, yeah. really. And then to have journeyed it myself and to really have to put in the effort of getting the healing in coaching has been very enlightening.
You know, and one of the other things that you said that was really interesting is that you have a situation where a part that is an alternate personality in you, Andrea, was serving the same entity that a part or an alternate personality inside of the handler was serving.
Yep.
So you have this, like, three-stranded cord running in the background to bind two people together and swing the influences a certain way. That is also extremely insightful. All right. We're going to move off of this because I got to come back to the Hollow Earth thing. So a question that comes up, I think, for a number of people, okay, especially people that maybe have started to connect the dots, say, okay, maybe there is a hollow earth. Maybe when the Bible says, you know, Satan was going to and forth along the earth and also up and down in it, Book of Job, it's actually discussing how he literally went up and down from the surface of the earth to somewhere else. The Bible describes several things. It actually describes an underground portal network whereby Jonah, swallowed by a fish from the surface of the sea, is able to descend into Hades in the fish, wherein he cries out from the belly of Sheol to the Lord. And the Bible describes locations deep under the earth, the pit, the abyss, and activity going on there. And people have definitely, at least at this point, probably come across a YouTube video or some other content in some form that suggests there is a massive portal in Antarctica. Maybe they just watched the Godzilla movie and realize that Godzilla can go in and out of Hollow Earth, as can King Kong. And, so it's become a cultural conversation. And then... when I was growing up, right, they came out with this movie series called Lord of the Rings, based on the book by J.R. Tolkien, where we have Middle Earth. And it's in Middle Earth that we meet the elves and the dwarves, human races, orcs, and other things. And, you know, then the question becomes, well, is there a difference between Middle Earth and Hollow Earth? Are they the same thing? Do either of them exist? What do you think?
I think that they are different. I do believe that the elves and the dwarves, that they are in both places, and there's different factions of elves and dwarves. And you have Middle Earth dwarves and Hollow Earth dwarves, but you also have the combo of them. And this is actually a conversation that we have had privately about it. As far as, like, Middle Earth, it's more in the, like, mantle of the earth. It's not, there's, like, no sky, but it can look like there is. And the terrain is like, they're basically gigantic caves. Like Journey to the Center of the Earth, like every rendition that shows the giant cave and the giant ecosystem, like that's essentially Middle Earth.
They certainly didn't spare any punches with you. Now, please, continue.
continue where?
So, do you guys have, I mean, you started off by explaining they took you to Hollow Earth for these, like, Hunger Game-type programming agenda. I mean, do you have experiences, you or alternate personalities that have reported memories to you that have helped you to explore this conversation?
So, when I would be trafficked to the military bases from the church, they would do stuff in those military bases, but then I would be trafficked to Hollow Earth, where I would, well, they would force front an altar, very similar to Emily's Chosen One programming. This was the same altar that my grandfather made in that ritual where I was, me and my mother were abducted. And so they would force front this altar and then send me to Hollow Earth. But I was completely unconscious. I have absolutely no recollection of it. He's the only one that remembers anything. And he would be sent to these hunting games, which are like the Hunger Games, but instead of fighting other people, you are basically surviving in the environment without anything. So it's basically like the start of a RPG crafting game where you have to figure out how to survive in the wilderness. And they would just leave you on this part of Hollow Earth to survive for weeks to months at a time. And I would have the same changeling thing as Emily had as well while this was going on.
So you believe you were physically there?
Yes. And definitely physically, because I have some scars on my body that make absolutely no sense.
What kind of environmental threats did this part report to you?
So there are a lot of the memories that I currently have access to from him are giant, giant trees. Like the forests are massive. Like a regular sized forest is like a redwood forest kind of thing.
Yeah.
There is one clear memory where there were bears that were made out of tree bark and they did some terrible things. There are giant bugs and I have always and absolutely still have a phobia of bugs, and bees and wasps. And there's like these giant wasps. Like you think Pokemon kind of Pokemon has this bee Pokemon and it's like,
3 feet
this
tall.
Big, yeah, they have some of those, everything there seems to be really, really huge. So like the King Kong movies, they portray it pretty accurately. And when you look up, you can see the other side, so you can see more land when you're looking up at the sky because there's no sky; it's just the other side of Hollow Earth, which is also very trippy.
So that's what this part gave you back. Mm-hmm. I mean, the memory is seeing the other side, like land above your.
Yeah.
So the gravitational field down there basically pushes outward.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There's also day and night cycles. I'm not 100% sure how they work, but there is a day and night cycle as well.
And there is weather.
Yeah, there's weather.
Are there multiple continents?
Absolutely.
Now, you drew a picture.
I did, yes.
Because, and this, how long ago did you draw this picture?
I drew this picture when I was in 10th grade originally.
Okay.
And then I redrew it or kind of touched it up probably about two and a half.
Yeah.
3 years ago, somewhere around there, when I started talking with my alters very actively.
Yeah.
Because the one that I mentioned who in the last episode, who worked in hell, he would often go to Hollow Earth in the physical and in the spirit realm and interact with a bunch of stuff. So he actually had this entire map, and he was the one helping me draw it out back in 10th grade, and then helped me redraw it into a more accurate representation. And he actually was able to put down some of the major cities of some of the big entities and religions or mythology, like Asgard, and where the Norse mythology entities are located in Hollow Earth, what territory they claim as theirs. There's a physical Babylon in Hollow Earth. And then there is the Summerlands, where the Fae exist.
The Summerlands, yeah.
Now, we are showing that picture. Mm-hmm. So for those of you that are not on YouTube, when you get done listening to this, go to YouTube, find a timestamp, and you could take a look at this particular drawing that Andrea has done. Now, Andrea, I'm going to tell you, I ran into Hollow Earth continents in like 2016. I mean, this, so this is stuff that a lot of survivors, it's a world that a lot of survivors have been plugged into in one way or another. I think a lot of it is sitting on the bed of generational iniquity that through the bloodline connects them into this world. And then through the programming and everything that happens in their lives, then they get initiated into this world, so to speak, and begin to operate in different ways. But wow, like I began to document several continents. I mean, I had a list working at one point of my own list of all these Hollow Earth continents, and then like on top of that, you begin to add cities, and it's robust. I don't think the influence of Hollow Earth on the surface world can be understated. Talk to me a little bit more.
I originally had continent names for all of those continents that I had drawn out back in 10th grade. I haven't re-added them to the map because they weren't 100% accurate, but I know that when I was first listening to a lot of your podcasts, you mentioned Lemuria, mm-hmm. I believe, as a Hollow Earth continent or something similar to that. And one of the names on the map originally was very, very close to it. And I don't remember what it was, but I was like, that is like almost identical to what I called this continent.
Yeah, it was off by like one letter because she came running in.
Or like a sound or something.
Yeah, wow. To show us that. Yeah.
It wasn't Lemuria, but it was like Laratia or Lemaria or something like that.
Yeah, I think that was one of the first physical things that like in the 3D world where we were all like, oh.
Wow.
This is real.
Yeah.
Like my podcast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, I don't even remember that.
It was some podcast.
I kind of remember that. I kind of remember. Now you mentioned Babylon being a physical city in Hollow Earth. Now, I knew that. The reason why I knew that is because when I was working with others on Temple Mount programming and bondage, we learned several things. One of the things we learned is that there are people all over the world who have soul parts that are trafficked to the Temple Mount for end times programming specifically, to be uploaded and then sent back, which is basically helping to underwrite the Illuminati timelines for the end times, which are not God's timelines. And some of that is happening at the Temple Mount. We began to learn about a hybrid Council of 13 that does their rituals and meets at the Temple Mount, and people that were involved in that also described a portal to Babylon. And when we started leading into where is the Babylon that this portal is taking things in and out of under the Temple Mount, the answer was Hollow Earth. So this is all stuff that I'm like independently discovering. So when you say it, it's like, wow. Now, do you believe that you had parts that were in Asgard or in Babylon or in some of maybe these other cities?
I know for me, the primary locations that soul parts specifically were in was Asgard and the Summer Isles.
Summerlands?
The Summer Mounds, yeah. And
There's all three.
They have multiple names. Depending, they don't like having a singular name. But yeah, a lot of that was where I primarily had stuff. I had a lot. I had some stuff in Middle Earth as well. So,
and so what happened there?
I had the part of me that was contracted to several Fae Lords for that was a part of the assassination program originally. She was contracted out by the military for the Fae realms and spent a lot of time in suicide squads, basically, and ran suicide missions and sabotage missions for the Kingdom of Darkness in different capacities. I don't know what the purpose was or why. I just know that things needed to go get blown up. So not a lot of information as far as that's concerned, but I know that there was a lot of portaling in and out of the Fae realms, a lot of mushroom circles, and a lot of the trafficking was done through ley lines and Fae realms. Mm-hmm. So a lot of soul parts also got trafficked through those areas.
What about you, Emily?
Oh.
Is there more that you want to add to this?
So as far as like things that were done there with the Babylonian stuff in Hollow Earth, there is sort of like an area where they have almost like a civilization build where you want to try to build the best empire. And then they essentially, once you reach Babylon's level, they come through and they cull the whole population for essence. And that takes place in Hollow Earth, somewhere around that area where the physical Babylon is. And I know that with just if you look at the lore from almost all of the ancient pagan religions and how they talk about Hollow Earth, like I think that I believe that they're talking about the like fighting the Nephilim and being and having to retreat to Hollow Earth, because you can, like, particularly like the Tuatha De Danann, when they have a book called the Book of can't remember, but it's like it is the story of how the Tuatha De Danann, which are the Irish pantheon, how they were chased out of Ireland and had to go underground,
mm-hmm.
and to survive, mm-hmm. and had to have a civilization underground, which is the Summerlands in Hollow Earth. And so I have memories of being taken to Hollow Earth in the Summerlands and meeting elves and meeting dwarves and helping to, I have an altar that has memories of being a smithy, basically a blacksmith, and was making armor in Hollow Earth and in Middle Earth for fighting factions of elves that were trying to take over different parts of Middle Earth. And it's like an ongoing battle in Middle Earth.
So we're experiencing Middle Earth and Hollow Earth as different realms. Mm-hmm. You say that Middle Earth almost seems like under the crust or somewhere in major caverns. And then Hollow Earth is just the other side.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of shape of Earth makes your experience make the most sense in your mind?
The Taurus.
The Taurus.
Yeah, the Taurus. The, like, donut-shaped Earth but
when
kind
you,
of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, when you search up the just hollow Earth on Google, I looked at those images and I'm like, no, that makes sense now. That mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Wow.
Where it's like the, it's yeah. not quite as wide, but it's wide enough where like something can fit inside.
Mm-hmm. And by Taurus, it is the shape, T-O-R-U-S. It, mm-hmm. it has an equation and it can take different forms, which can be more donut-like or more spherical, and it kind of can mm-hmm. be different. It's not a perfect sphere by mm-hmm. any means of the imagination, but it also has a hollow center.
Yep.
And poles.
It just does make a lot more sense because it just like the lore and the mythology and what the witches and wizards pull on and sorcerers pull on, it they are really tied with like the elements, and it doesn't it what the mythology of the ancient civilizations points to Hollow Earth mm-hmm. and a Middle Earth and the different like spells that witches and wizards and sorcerers do. It points to pulling on elements that don't necessarily exist here.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one of the interesting things about this whole conversation, right? I mean, and I've talked about this in some of my different talks, but they know, the scientists know there are millions of miles of underground tunnels mm-hmm. around the world. Major, massive, unexplored tunnel systems in the Middle East, especially like through Turkey and...
Like man-made ones?
Who knows who made them?
Oh, okay.
They don't know. And it looks like different portions of those millions of miles were carved out at different times in different eras with different technology. Like there's a massive tunnel systems in South America. The interesting thing about the South American ones is they were found and occupied by the Jesuits who came over to South America on these discovery missions. They certainly called it missionary trips, but they were finding these sites and then establishing Catholic churches on top of the access points to the underground tunnels to consolidate power. This is the Catholic Church controls access to the underground tunnel systems in South America, which has some of the most significant ancient civilizations that left residues on the surface world behind. You know, all the way through to, you know, Peru and Argentina and like all the way down. And so we have all of this evidence that is actually not even conspiratorial. It's just the facts. And the idea that some of these tunnels are going to lead to large underground caverns, I mean, I think that a lot of what you're saying makes sense. There are reports that these large caverns underground are occupied. Other whistleblowers, people that have come out of underground base projects have talked about reptilians and other entity groups occupying some of these vast tunnels and cavern systems. You're just nodding your heads.
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe the reptilians are Middle Earth. Rather than Hollow Earth, they're mostly Middle Earth is what I believe.
I know that we've had... Sasquatch has been thrown around in my family, in our family, of experiences with Sasquatch and like with Sasquatch races.
Yeah.
Like more than one.
Yeah.
And how they will phase through reality.
Okay. Do you think they have a counterpart reality and existence in Hollow Earth?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Why?
Well, one of my alters says they do. He was apparently sent to work with the Sasquatch for a bit. In the physical, I guess. He says he speaks Sasquatch. It's kind of weird. And our uncle, I tried to like find proof of this because it was so out there. And our uncle or our cousin, was it our cousin? I don't know.
I don't remember.
But someone on our dad's side of the family, he lives on a farm and had all these Sasquatch coming in and doing stuff to his property. And I was like, okay, Dad, well, ask him about this color fur, this color fur, this color fur, and this color fur. Because if they are black fur, they work for Satan. Do not interact with them. And pray prayers to get them off your property. If they're white, they're docile. They don't really want to do much or something. And then there was like brown fur and then like a red fur. And I don't remember exactly what my altar had listed off about these fur colors. But basically, my dad came back and was like, yeah, he says that those fur colors line up with their actions. And I was like, what?
Yeah. So it's also not just us that, like, in our family that have had that, these really supernatural experiences. So.
Tell me more about the Fae Kingdom.
Okay. Well, we talked a little about the Tuatha De Danann. Mm-hmm. Which are entities like Lug and
Ogma.
Ogma, yeah, the ancient ones. But also, so the Fae Kingdom is fairies. They're also, I don't know how they have managed to basically take over all of modern literature, because like right now, the Fae Lords are a thing that all women, young women, are reading about, you know, in those novels that I talked about, the explicit ones. Most of them have to do, if it's fantasy, it's Fae. It's Fae Lords. And I know that they have to do with, I believe it's the Book of the, or the Order of the Golden Dawn. Okay. It's the, an order that was pushing New Age. Essentially, the Fae are behind the New Age movement. And a lot of where the witches now, they are more fae witches. They're not satanic witches anymore. They pull on the fae realms.
I mean, you still have satanic witches, but yeah. Fae witches have like...
The fae witches are the more like socially acceptable ones.
Yeah, the ones who are dabbling white are using magic. A lot of fae magic. The ones who are like public witches and the general public... They usually use fae magic.
Mm. Yeah. And our family, like our mom's side is Irish. And that has come from like her side of the family, but also like her dad.
Yeah.
And like the Irish, I don't know why they are so explicitly tied to the fairy kingdom, but they are. And like if you have Irish descent, you are probably a lot more tied into the fairies. There will be like, you know, pixies showing up. Like you're a lot more in tune with like nature.
Mm-hmm. Nature manipulation is a lot easier if you have any Irish in you.
Mm-hmm. How about Scottish?
Scottish yes. as well. Scottish, British Isles, yes. It's most strong on the Irish because they've stuck with that same like lore and mythology and the same language. I think the language actually is one of the big things because Ogma, the god of language, the Tuatha De Danann, that ancient Celtic language has just transformed into Irish Gaelic, while Scottish Gaelic is a slightly different dialect. And so I think it has a lot to do with they speak the same language. And so there's a lot more of a tie back to that strong, strong magic.
And so with the fairies and the fae, there is no good fae. Like if you look at history, pop culture, I don't care about, because that has become a fantasy. All of the original histories of the Fae, they are malevolent. They're evil. Like they will manipulate, and that is like they interpret things by the letter of the law, not the intent of the law. So you have to be very careful with like what you say. And that's actually something in a lot of these spells, like you have to be like 100% on with what you say. because if you mess it up, like, it can backfire on you a lot. And with the Fae kingdoms, you have, like, the Seelie and the Unseelie courts. And so that is essentially, it's like the light and the dark, and at least they say it's like the light and the dark. And it's just like, who is less likely to kill you versus how some, like, versus use you, I guess, is more like the lights, the light side, it's more for their advantage. And the, like, the dark side is like, they want, they're more going to, like, kill you for their purposes. Do you guys want to weigh in at all on any of this?
I guess with the light and the dark, it's more of a who's going to torture you to death and you're going to die a little bit quicker versus put you to sleep for 100 years and then have you wake up as the rest of your family dies. Oh, one sees yeah. you more as, like, amusement, and the other is more you're a sheep and they feed off of you.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, letter of the law, making sure that you don't lose yourself. Yeah.
But in your, I guess, lived experience,
mm-hmm.
right, this is more than lore.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We had pixies in our apartment.
Oh, God.
Stuff kept going missing. We couldn't figure out where it was going. Everyone was like, did you put this here? Did you put that there? Where are all the spoons? For some reason, they love spoons. And we just had items going missing all the time until we did prayers for pixies. Specifically pixies. And eventually, it stopped. But literally, so much stuff went missing and no one could figure out why it just disappeared.
Wow.
Now, you couldn't see the pixies in the physical. They were just, I think they were in the astral.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Going around, stealing your stuff, and then pulling the stuff into the astral. It was a terrible experience.
Like, we never could find it. Wow. That's the thing. Like, it didn't just turn up later. It was gone. We would have to buy, like, your favorite item of clothing. We'd have to rebuy it, kind of thing.
You know, as crazy as this may sound, I think that there are going to be people, at least two or three of them, that are going to think about their situation to be like, I have literally experienced stuff disappear, never to be found again. And it seems like it was probably taken out of the physical realm entirely. Now, you guys are saying it was in your experience that pixies, which seem to be, I mean, I would classify that as a type of elemental spirit.
No, a fairy.
They're a fairy.
Pixies are fairies. They're part of the Fae Kingdom.
Yeah, pixies and fairies, they're kind of...
Uh-huh.
They're like, you have
3D rats and mice, I guess, just with sentience.
You have, like, the Fae who are like...
We have some opinions about it.
You have the Fae who are like the tall human-sized fairies, as media would usually call them, mm-hmm. and then you have fairies who are slightly smaller, and you know, and then like Tinkerbell-sized stuff. That those are pixies.
Mm-hmm.
So Tinkerbell and Peter Pan, that she's a pixie.
Yeah. As far as like my lived experience, where we grew up on a dead end dirt road, surrounded by trees and wetlands, and like uncultivated land for a very, very long time, most of our childhood. And there would be like a lot of elementals that we would talk to. And then there would also be the fairies that would be around. Like, I was obsessed with fairies as a child. And mom was always not happy about that obsession with fairies. And I never understood why. And now that I'm older, I'm like, oh yeah, no, I am not also, I understand. And so I think that a lot of people that have experience with the Fae realm and the Fae kingdoms, they are a lot more prone to nature, to like loving nature and have this inexplicable, having this draw mm-hmm. to like loving natures and trees. And I don't know why, but I do think that the elemental kingdom and the fae kingdom are tied up somehow. Probably a lot of like essence trading.
Yeah, I believe most of fairy magic and fae magic is tied in with elemental magic and elemental power.
Yeah, it's a combination of elemental and essence, which is why they do feed off of humans, is because they utilize the essence in magic specifically.
Something that I was in massive bondage to was my dreams were really bad, and I was having like a lot of nightmares. And this was more recently where nightmares suddenly started popping up. It was probably within the last couple of years, like as an adult. And I'm like, why am I having trouble sleeping? Why am I being plagued by nightmares? Why can I not wake up? And in a session, it turned out that it was actually, we found a dream, like a dream factory that was being run by Oberon, who is one of the kings of the Fae, or at least Shakespeare put him as a king of the Fae.
Okay.
And so, and he's actually like some kind of dream fairy. So that was something. And then once we actually took care of that and I did like, and I got freedom from like Oberon, my sleep was like, it did like a 180. It was like so much better.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible. Yeah. So let me ask you this question. You guys have, and I would say that a bloodline connection into this realm, the Fae Kingdom. And this extends into experiences touching Middle Earth and Hollow Earth experientially. Is there a crossover between that and your experiences with being trafficked, at least in soul parts or essence, to other planets?
Maybe not necessarily with the Fae, but there is connection between Hollow Earth and trafficking to other planets that I'm aware of for myself.
Talk about that for a minute.
So this goes back more to the Nazis. So I know I was taken to those games and was sponsored by a big tech giant. And he has, facilities in Hollow Earth, I'm not sure where, that, the altar that was going through those games, because he survived them, he was taken, to fulfill some sort of contract in space, was trafficked to physically into a alien body, into another galaxy. Lived life there for a while, had his memories completely erased of the games and me and his life here. So he thought he was a brand new person over there. And then after that was fulfilled with the aliens and being trafficked over there, his physical body was brought back to Earth, trafficked into Hollow Earth to work for this tech giant in his whatever he has going on in Hollow Earth. And that's about all I know of the Hollow Earth stuff involved with that specifically, because it was a more recent discovery, but that it was kind of wild to me to find out that that was happening and that physical body of my alters is still there.
So the tech giant that has this operation in Hollow Earth also has an operation on surface Earth.
Yep.
My goodness.
And on the moon.
One of the interesting things that I ran into years ago, and I didn't really have much context for it at all, but one of the early appropriations of what I call the Earth System's Prayer was Hollow Earth Corporations. I didn't know what the Hollow Earth Corporations were. I didn't know who owned them. I don't know how to get an LLC established in Hollow Earth. But somehow we were getting people delivered from the corporations Hollow Earth. I was like, what does this even mean? All right, let me ask you a question. Talk to me a little bit about the journey that you guys have taken with Jesus over the past couple years.
And do you want to start?
Um, I guess a lot of my journey with Jesus specifically is still ongoing because I had a lot of false Jesus program put in as well in a different capacity than Emily. For me, Jesus had been my friend for, you know, since I was two. And we went to a little private school and there was a survivor there. She was a handler during the time. And I was telling her about Jesus. And at that time I was, you know, I had hit puberty and I was reading the Song of Solomon at the time. And she was like, well, Jesus is your lover. Don't think about other boys until you're older. Jesus is your lover. And I had also, at the time, had just gotten internet access and had discovered porn. And so for a good 15 years, the false Jesus program was interlaid with my sexual identity and my sexuality. And so for me, when I started coaching, I had a very hard time with Jesus showing up in my system because it would always turn sexual.
Wow.
Even with the amount of prayers that my coach did before, during, and after the sessions for me. And so it's been a rediscovery of my friend Jesus over the last couple of years and being able to actually say, yes, he's my Lord and Savior. Because of how interwoven that programming had become.
Wow.
So, yeah, I still, most of the time, I still call on the Lion of the Tribe of Judah. And all of me is just like, Kitty's here! Because he's always comes in 10 feet tall.
Yeah.
And that is always the first thing that happens during session. And it is the first thing I lean on when I spend time with him. So.
Thank you.
Okay, my turn. So when I started coaching, I couldn't talk to Jesus really or feel him or experience him or God in general. I was still asking, but I got to the point where I was asking for signs, and it had been that way for quite a few years because I couldn't connect. That it had been difficult to connect for most of my life, actually. I remember I accepted Jesus at 3, said like the acceptance prayer, but I know all of my altars were Christian, like even before then. Like they knew Jesus. Their memories had to be erased of Jesus and like their Christianity taken from them. So as I grew older, there was like, I don't know how old I was at the time, but I remember my mom being upset with me that I wouldn't worship. And I remember telling her, it's hard to worship when angels scare you. So my entire life, it's been very, very hard to connect. And then I got into coaching specifically because I was like, I can't feel anything. And I know this Queen of Heaven prayer should have made me feel something. But there was nothing. So it was very difficult starting the coaching because it was like I couldn't hear, I couldn't see. Everything was shut down. But as I have gone through it over the last few years and my siblings to tell them, hey, or ask them, what are you seeing in this situation? How are you seeing heaven? Am I seeing the same thing you are? And usually it would be what they share is what I was seeing. And I was like, oh my God, okay, I am seeing something. And so I was training myself using the help of my siblings to like re-engage with the supernatural. And at this point now, I did have some false Jesus stuff, but luckily it was pretty easy to take care of because now Jesus can come in and I can actually interact with Jesus rather than just the Lion. And I'm relearning what exactly the voice of Holy Spirit and the Father and Jesus all sound like, because now I can actually start to hear them clearly, which is something I was never able to do before. So it's been slow and steady, but it's been very, very helpful. And also a lot of my altars have very good relationships with Jesus. And so when I haven't been able to connect with Jesus, they would actually connect with Jesus and talk to Jesus themselves. And they'd go spend time with Jesus, or they'd go spend time in heaven. And so even though I couldn't personally connect to Jesus, because they were all doing their own personal walks with him physically for them, not in the 3D, but in their spiritual walks and bodies, it was a lot easier to hold on to, like, okay, eventually I will also be able to build this relationship back up with Jesus. And I am finally at the point where I am starting to be able to do that. So it's very exciting.
Thank you. Go ahead, Emily.
For me, I think the false Jesus program really, I'm still working on unraveling that, because it was such a, because Jesus was such a close friend, and was a pillar, that for years, like, I still believed in Jesus, but like I actually like have a better time, or an easier time, with God the Father. And recently I've really had to challenge myself about connecting with Jesus and reconnecting with him, and like understanding, essentially re-understanding like salvation. And I think because of being in the Chosen One program and seeing such bad things and having that part of my identity for such a long time, I've had to really struggle with the like apathy and the ability to just shut off the love of humanity. And like, so as I've been taking this healing journey, my altars have told me about how Jesus, it would always be Jesus that would come. And when their contract was finished with the kingdom of darkness, Jesus would come and get them and actually make this whole like to-do about like showing up for them and being like, this one's mine. And taking them back and bringing back my humanity. And he has always shown up that way for me. And I think just me now, it's just that rebuilding and that re-understanding of like how good Jesus is. And that he does want me to follow him and love him. And it's just, it's that choice of loving Jesus in spite of what my emotions are telling me, because I have felt the love of Jesus and he has shown up for me. And so it's just, I am still on that journey, but it is getting easier every day that I'm like, yes, I choose to follow Jesus. Kind of like how forgiveness works. Like you have to start saying you forgive this person, and eventually the forgiveness will manifest in your heart and it will actually like take hold. And I think that for me, having battled with the false Jesus programming since I was like 11, it's, I choose to love Jesus and I choose to follow him.
Thank you.
I would like to add something, kind of going back to the LGBT stuff, specifically with how it was hard to feel Jesus. When I was in that community, I was convinced that what I was feeling at pride parades and stuff, and like the excitement and the like goosebumps and the like that kind of feeling, was God, because I was constantly asking for signs, and that was the way that I kind of felt God at the time. But now, having actually been able to reconnect with God and know that, like, the feeling of connecting to Jesus and his presence and him talking to you is actually usually tears. The things that I felt at those pride parades and stuff, they were not from God, because anyone can make you feel goosebumps or, like, happy and giddy and those kind of emotions. But the Kingdom of Darkness isn't going to make you feel tears for, like, it's like a completely different feeling. Because Kingdom of Darkness uses crying usually for torture and all of that type of stuff. They're not going to make you feel happy and overwhelmed with kindness and, like, realization through tears.
Yeah, the Kingdom of Darkness can't emulate true love.
Yeah.
And then actually something else for my journey with Jesus is I... being able to choose Jesus is because I felt very clearly the difference of what having Jesus and not having Jesus was like. Because of growing up Christian and being surrounded by, you know, fake Christians, but also true Christians, I had never not felt that energy.
Yeah.
And there, when I was in LA, I actually went to a gathering of another religion. I think it was Buddhism, I think. But it was like a stadium full of people, literally completely packed, and all the workers that were all the volunteers there. And I was in this stadium surrounded by thousands of people, and I did not feel like I was surrounded by anybody. Like, the lack of Jesus, all of these people that didn't believe in Jesus, and just that concentration of energy surrounded by being one of the few people in that room with Jesus, was the difference is like night and day. And being able to, like, recall that feeling and being is very helpful on being able to know when Jesus is present and when he is not. And that he is with me. And so it really does help with the, like, false Jesus programming and being able to connect with Jesus and know what his love actually feels like.
I appreciate that. Wow. Thank you. Thank you, all of you, for being here and talking to me. You have shared a lot of things. You've been vulnerable. I appreciate that. I appreciate your bravery to share openly on these subjects, and I applaud you for stepping up to the plate. Friends, we are out of time. You've been listening to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall. God bless and Godspeed.
You've been listening to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall. Visit me at danduvall.com, where you'll discover merch, books, and the opportunity to engage in our private social network. Join the tribe by subscribing to our email list and supporting this podcast.